Infinity Games Podcast.
Okay.
Okay, so welcome. This is the Infinity Games Podcast, and this is episode 9.
We're so close to double digits.
So close, I can taste it.
Mmm, we're so close to episode 42.
Just fucking warp travel to it.
Yeah. Anybody that wants to know what episode 42 is about, just hop in your handy-dandy time machine, skip, you know, another 33 weeks into the future, and you're good to go.
Yep, unless we spontaneously combust again.
Yeah, that happened once. It wasn't fun. It took about a week to put myself back together.
Yep. Some Dr. Manhattan shit right there.
Yeah. Minus the dicky god complex.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, no, scratch that. My god complex is way worse.
So, what's your name?
My name's Kelrix King.
And I'm Jukebox Hero.
Yay.
If there's anything you want us to talk about, any feedback, anything we missed, any comments you have, you can find us on Twitter at @games_podcast or on Facebook at Infinity Games Podcast. If you give us a 5-star review on iTunes, we'll be sure to read it on the show.
Absolutely. We'd love to hear from you guys.
Definitely. So this week, you wanna tell them what we're doing?
No, you go ahead, because if I do, you'll just interrupt me.
Yep. So it's a long-running thing.
Yeah.
We're going to start off with hidden gems. We're going to move on to games we've been playing. And our main topic for today is Fire Emblem.
Oh.
The jizz is in the pants. Unfortunately, the pants are on the ground.
I wore my rubber undies just for today.
Gross.
Yay.
You got that latex fetish?
Yeah, buddy. No. God, no.
There's a little bit of truth in every lie.
God damn it. Okay, so the hidden gem that I'm going to be talking about is, I'd say an averagely known DS game. Like, I feel like it got enough hype and enough people talked about it, but I still feel like it definitely flies under the radar, and it's Digimon World Dusk for the Nintendo DS.
You know, it's kind of funny you say that it's relatively well known, because I don't know a single person other than you that knows they exist.
Well, fuck me sideways then.
But hey, that's why it's a hidden gem, right?
Exactly. So it came out in September 18th, 2007. So a whole 10 freaking years ago now.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, it's been around for a while. They were developed and published by Namco Bandai Games, which makes sense. I mean, Bandai Digimon, you know. But
yeah,
so
makes sense.
These, now to preface this, Digimon World Dusk and its brother/sister game, Digimon World Dawn, they are a sequel to a degree. The first Digimon World game that we got on like handhelds, at least that I know about, it was just called Digimon World DS. The main reason I'm talking about Dusk and Dawn as opposed to Digimon World DS is Digimon World DS is still a really fun game, but there are a lot of things that Dusk and Dawn just did better. Like, the quickest example I can give to you is, unless you grinded really hard in Digimon World DS, you'd be lucky to have more than one mega level Digimon by the time you got to the final boss.
Lame.
It was more likely you'd have one mega level and then two ultimate level Digimons. And I swear to God, if you correct me on that's not what they are in Japanese. Fine, ultimate and perfect. Is that better, you bastards? Anyways.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really weird. It goes in Japan, it goes rookie, adult, perfect, ultimate, which is super fucking backwards in my opinion. Like, you'd think perfect would come after ultimate, but I digress.
Yeah.
So in Digimon World Dusk and Dawn, they just made it more feasible to... They made grinding less of a chore, is probably the easiest way to put it. So it was almost impossible not to have a full team of Megas by the time you got to the final boss. And you'd have a full team of Megas a good bit before you got to the final boss, but... It ran smoother, there were more Digimon in it, some of the evolutions weren't as much of a pain in the ass to get. There are still a couple you have to jump through hoops for, but for the most part, it's just a better experience. So, the main point of the game is you start out, and your main character is already a very well-known Digimon tamer. Like, you start the game, and, like, the first, like, four battles you do, you have, like, a full team of ultimate-level Digimon.
Damn.
And then pretty much what happens is, whichever game you're playing, you'll reside in one of two districts. You'll reside in either Dark Moon City or Sunshine City, depending. I'll let you guess which city you're in for Dusk and Dawn. It's very, very no-brainer. But
I'm in Twilight Town.
Yes! Kingdom Hearts references. But we'll talk about that one day when I have 4 hours to rant. But
I'll give you that.
So, yay! So, essentially what happens is this virus breaks into your town, or your city, I should say. They are cities, after all. A virus breaks down, and he, like, hacks all of your stuff. And anybody who knows anything about Digimon knows that Digimon themselves are literally data. Like, they're just ones and zeros that have a conscience, essentially.
Digital monsters, data, fucking...
Yeah.
Make your parallels.
Yay! A virus breaks into the city, hacks everything, and reverts almost every Digimon to a baby level Digimon, like an in-training level Digimon. So you go from having, like, Metal Greymon and like, Werurumon to having, you know, Coromon and Sunomon. So it's, like, you know, a big downgrade. So essentially what happens is that they're like, well, this is a problem. You're the best tamer we've got, so you gotta go and figure this stuff out and, you know, befriend some more Digimon, like, strengthen your team up again and all this. So, you know, off you go. And then, you know, as you move go out through the game, you know, you can capture new Digimon. Not necessarily capture. What happens is you get into a fight and this little scan screen will go, and it'll say, like, let's say you run into an in-training Digimon, it'll give you, like, 20% scan data. You run into, like, later in the game, if you run into, like, a mega level Digimon, it'll give you 5% scan data. And then once you have scan data of a Digimon that's anywhere from 100 to 999%, you can then convert the scan data into that actual Digimon. So once I've run into enough Agumons and beaten enough of them in game, I can go back to the city, go back to my little home base, and make myself an Agumon that I can then take with me and start leveling up.
The completionist to me would love this.
The completionist in me would hate this, because I don't have a completionist in me, because fuck that shit. But, so I've played Digimon World Dusk, I've played Digimon World Dawn, I've played Digimon World DS. They are all wonderful, wonderful games. They are single-handedly the games that I've dumped the most time into. And Jukebox knows this story. It says a lot. Jukebox knows this story very well, because I never shut the fuck up about it, is there are certain Digimon that you can only get by trading and breeding certain kinds of Digimon eggs through both games. So, like, my bread and butter, my pride and joy was I had a Gallantmon Crimson mode, which I had to have... Seraphimon. So I had to have Gilmon's Mega Evolution, and I had to have Patamon's Mega Evolution. Patamon isn't an issue. You can easily get Patamon in both Dusk and Dawn. The tricky part is Gilmon, because you can't get Gilmon in Dusk, which was my main game. So I stole my brother's game of Digimon World Dawn. I traded over a Guillemon and I went to work, and after about, you know, like 4 or 5 hours of straight grinding, I finally had my guy. So, and I just kept grinding. I just kept like leveling up different Digimons, like breeding certain eggs, like getting all the burst modes for Shine Greymon, Mirage Galgamon, etc. I got Susanoomon, who was a real fucking pain in the ass to get. I did all the tamer battles. I maxed out my rank, etc., etc. I put 168 hours into just Digimon Dusk. That's not counting what I had to do in Digimon World Dawn to get all the Digimon that I had in my copy. So I probably had about 200 hours total.
I think you had 249. I feel like I remember that number for a reason.
Yeah, I don't know. That might have been after like a second playthrough. I don't know. I had a lot of hours into this game. Okay. So I had left it alone for maybe a month or so, just because I'd kind of capped everything out. And then I was just on the internet one day and I was reading. I was like, oh, I really want this guy, right? He won't take me long. And I was like, screw it, I'm going to do it. So I find my copy, I boot it up, and guess what's not there? My save data. What a twist. Get out of here,
that
Shyamalan.
Fucking pain.
Lol. But, so, to my literal utter heartbreak, I was so fucking torn apart. My brother had taken my game and overwritten my save data. And that's not even the worst part of it. The worst part of it is he lost his copy of Digimon World Dawn. That's why he took my copy of Dusk. So because he lost his copy of Dawn, I couldn't even grind out my shit to get all my super uber guys again. I couldn't get Gallantmon Crimson Mode again. I couldn't get Susanoomon again. I couldn't get a couple of the burst modes again. So I was just stuck in limbo with an average team.
Freaking deal. Fucking dope.
It broke my goddamn soul.
No. I remember when that happened, you didn't shut up about it for like a full week.
Dude, it fucked me up. That's like, it was Shining Force that happened to you with.
Yeah, Shining Force 2. And yeah. Like nothing near what happened to Calyrex, but I was about 16 hours into that game. And this is a RPG on the Genesis, very similar style to Fire Emblem. But like, you know, those games aren't that super long, so I was probably only 2 to 4 hours to the end of it. And the fucking battery on my cartridge just gone, done. I was just like, I don't have the heart to even try this again in case the battery dies.
Yeah. And it was just that, and I tried saying, I was like, well, if you replace the battery, would that work? And, well, no, it doesn't work like that. If the battery dies, the save data goes with it, which is fucking unfortunate.
Well, that's the whole reason the battery's in there, though.
Exactly. So
I mean, I could replace the battery if I really wanted, but I do have Shining Force 2 on Steam now, and it's also on that Genesis Mega Collection.
Oh, yeah, so there's no... If you wanted to replace the battery, it would literally just be for the sake of having a fully working copy.
Pretty much. I mean, it's the same with, like, the Pokemon games, because I really want to do that for my Crystal copy. Because, you know, I have, like, several tens, maybe even over 100 hours in that one.
Mm-hmm.
And God knows I've played through it more than once, so that's just on the most recent save.
And yeah, no kidding.
Definitely with like the original Pokemons, and more so Gold and Silver because of the way their clock works, those ones just dried up within the last 10 years. Like the fact that my crystal's still going amazes me.
I think that happened to me the other couple of years ago, as I saw this thing on Facebook and it was like, oh, the Pokemon games only work for, you know, 15 years, so they, or whatever, they were only designed to work for 15 years, so it's like, you know, they all came out in 94, so, you know, at best, assuming that 15 years was, like, set in stone, the longest one would last is, like, maybe 2011 or 2012. Yeah. So it's, I remember, I think I booted one up just a couple years ago, and it worked perfectly fine. I'm like, people are stupid. But it very well, you never know, it very well, because I think my dad bought those copies. He bought them from, like, Gamer's Edge when they were going out of business.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Or whatever. So they very well could have had new batteries put in them for selling purposes, but...
I mean, they could have.
I don't know, right?
You know, I found silver at a secondhand store, and that one, it worked when I got it, and then about a year later, the battery had dried out. And that was probably like a full five years ago now. And then gold, like from the moment I found that one, the battery was dead.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Funk debt.
Didn't that silver cartridge have like a shit ton of legendaries on it too?
I don't know if it was that one. I think it may have actually been blue, which I found at a garage sale for like a dollar. Because I remember it had Mew on it, and I was just like, how the actual fuck do you get Mew?
So this... Travel cross country, bitch.
Because, you know, there's a lot of like Hacksaws type things where Game Sharks and whatnot are like a really convoluted way where you like open the menu and fly at the same time, which I've actually done in yellow.
Me too.
But, you know, these games came out in the mid-90s. I highly doubt this person knew how to do that then. So they probably got it from an event in like the US or something. So I transferred that over to my yellow cartridge.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
I remember I did that Mew glitch because I got yellow on my 3DS through the eShop and I did the Mew glitch on that.
Nice.
Because I was like, oh, I'll trade it over to Sun and Moon and I'll like play through the game with the Mew as like one of my starters, right? This was before I decided to Nuzlocke it right out of the beginning.
Yeah.
But, and then sure enough, they're like, oh, Sun and Moon won't have Pokebank red, blue, and yellow capabilities for like another 6 months after release. And I'm just like, man, fuck you.
Ugh.
Ruin my dreams.
Fuck shit. I still haven't gone back to Sun and Moon to complete the decks or anything.
It's not fun.
I mean, that game didn't hold me well enough, so.
No, it didn't. I'm half surprised I even beat it. I really am.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think my girlfriend's gotten... No, I think she got off the very, like, the very beginning island, but she hasn't gotten much farther than that.
Yeah.
Because it just, it doesn't grab you.
Yeah, hold... Well, doesn't. No, it grabs you too hard. It just holds your hand forever.
Well, yeah. The main issue with Sun and Moon for me was the lack of gyms, honestly. I liked the trial idea, but I wish there had been more puzzles for each trial.
Yeah.
Equivalent to how the gyms are, because I'd be lying if I said that I didn't have fun.
Nope.
Like I'd get to a trial and I'd be like, well, that's another one down, fucking moving on. Like, cause it's like, you'd get there, you do some like super half-assed thing. Like you go looking through the forest for like certain mushrooms and I'm like, all right, fucking whatever.
Yeah.
And then, ooh, look, a totem Pokemon that kicks your ass, and, you know, if you don't have a fire type, then ruin my Nuzlocke.
Anyways. Oh, fuck that.
Goddamn, no, that fucking, I mean, it's, praying it's mantis. Just,
yeah, that fucking praying mantis just fucked everyone up.
I remember I was like, well, there goes my Nuzlocke, and you're like, I barely beat him, and then you tell me, like, a day later, you're like, you know, my girlfriend Kari was like, it wasn't even that hard. It's like, man, you picked the fire starter. Piss off.
Yeah, pretty much. My God.
But,
I don't know. I'm still anyway. A little proud that I managed to get all the way to the end on my Nuzlocke.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. You should be.
One of the Elite Four, though, beat me, so I didn't complete it. It was no, so fucking you, close.
You got a lot farther than I did. Man, if I hadn't been lazy, because, like, I got a Salandit. I did. He was my first encounter. I was like, oh my fucking God. I get a Salandit, and then I was too ignorant to grind him up a little bit.
Fuck the grind. And you know, it's almost astounding, because, you know, I was saying, like, I got through that entire game playing with almost exclusively my starter. Like, mm-hmm. There was rarely ever a case where I had to fucking switch out.
Yep.
But no, you were mentioning puzzles. You know what I'd like to see in a Pokemon game?
Let's hear this.
The fucking Puzzle League.
Ooh.
We ain't seen that shit since the Game Boy Color.
That'd be pretty badass.
Fucking just have it literally as like a side story thing that you don't even have to do. Have it be like the fucking Luchador three-way fights or whatever the fuck that was, except better because it's the fucking Puzzle League. People would actually play it.
I love Puzzle League, man. Puzzle League was a good time.
Yeah. It's
friggin'
for anyone who doesn't know, Pokemon Puzzle League is It's almost like Tetris, really, except you match colors. Actually, it's like Puyo Puyo with a Pokemon skin on it, which Pokemon Puzzle League was a copy of Tetris Attack, which was Puyo Puyo with a Mario skin on it.
And that was your NES history lesson, ladies and gentlemen.
Bitch, that was Super NES.
Oh, you're right, you're right. This was my Super Nintendo history lesson.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that about wraps up Hidden Gems. At the end of the day, like we tell you with pretty much every other Hidden Gem, if you find it, I'd say these games in particular, Digimon World, DS, me personally, I maybe wouldn't spend more than $20 on it. Like, it's a really fun game, but if you have to choose between Digimon World DS and Digimon World Dawn or Dusk, just pick up Dawn or Dusk. It does everything better. The story's not directly related to each other, so you're not going to miss out on any, like, super key factors or anything. But
it's like Pokemon, if you find Dawn or Dusk, and better.
Yeah, exactly. If you get Dawn, if you can find Dawn or Dusk for less than $30, pick them up. Absolutely, yeah. Pick them up. They're a great time. They'll keep you busy for a while.
You know, it's been a really long time since I've seen those games at, like, a store or anything. But I think
see them very much either.
The last time I saw them, in the big city, I think they were like 40 or 50.
Yeah, they're not cheap here.
Yeah. That's also Canadian.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Google does monetary comparisons is
foreign exchange.
The word I was looking for. Yeah, that. So, we're going to move into games we've been playing.
It's time for Games We've Been Playing, the segment where we give insight on what we've been playing. New or old, good or bad, here is what we've been playing. I'm going to lead this one off because I've only been playing
one thing.
Honestly, it's literally just been Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Links in between everything else.
Nice!
Yep. Just very casually, even.
Have you gotten anything interesting out of the Paradox Brothers yet?
Nope. I haven't even fought them.
Lame.
Yeah. I mean, I just started trying to get keys, like, this morning.
Yeah.
Because, like, I was just throwing a PvP duel every once in a while.
Yeah. They're not too bad. It's kind of weird. Personally, I find that level 40 Paradox Brothers are easier than the level 30 ones.
I felt that same way about, like, I think it was Pegasus.
I don't know if I did. No, I did do level 40 Pegasus, but I beat him by complete chance. Like, I got, like, a god hand right off the beginning, and he got nothing. But, because the thing with the Paradox Brothers is their main skill for, like, while you're dueling them is they start every duel with a certain monster on the field already. So, at level 20... Yeah, it's honestly not terrible for the most part. This is the main reason I say level 40 is easiest. I'll get to in a sec. At level 20, they start off with Shadow Ghoul on the field. So, it's only got 1600 attack. He's not too hard to get over.
Easy.
It's not bad at all. They're stupid easy on level 20, which, I mean, isn't saying much. But level 30, they start off with Labyrinth Tank on the field.
Okay.
So 2400 attack and defense. So he's a bit of a problem to get over. But their level 40 starts off with Labyrinth Wall on the field in defense mode. So, I mean, all you need to really do if you want to get ahead is you just got to throw stop defense, or if you have enemy controller or something, like, there's 10 different ways to get over him, you know? Yeah. But and then if you do their level 50 version, he starts off with Gate Guardian on the field, which is a fucking problem if you don't start with, like, the perfect card, but, yeah, no.
I think I'm going to have to, like, build a new deck for this because, you know, the one I'm still running is, you know, keeps Low-power monsters, keep them on the field until I pull one of my tributes. That was, like, the only strategy behind this deck, and it served me pretty fucking well.
My Magnet Warriors dummy these guys pretty good.
Yeah. Like, that was my biggest issue with that deck. I could defend against literally anything except a monster that was stronger than all of my tributes.
Yeah.
Like, if that happened, I was almost completely fucked.
Yeah, pretty much. And then, well, because they're running at the same time, what's your opinion on the whole super Joey thing?
Oh, the I had to check I was still recording. The
lol.
Does he have like his hand out and he appears on the overworld?
Yeah. Yep.
He's better than half of the duels. It's like a minor challenge.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
It's more entertaining than just auto-dueling cannon fodder.
Exactly. I find him at level 40 is a pretty good challenge because he's got those fucking, like, dragon warriors that can have 2,000 attack, no problem.
Yeah.
So that gives me a run. Like, I only beat him maybe 50% of the time at level 40. I beat him about 80, maybe even 90% of the time at level 30. He doesn't really hold up at level 30, but
I've only like dueled him maybe 3 times. I don't know what levels they were at, though.
Yeah, but, like, I'm not impressed with his event, particularly, because they're like, oh, we give you Red Eyes support, and I'm like, okay, where are all the Red Eyes cards, then? Like, you're giving us a trap card and a super shitty monster. Like, that's barely even a monster. It's like a glorified equip card that you have to sacrifice for, like...
What's the monster?
It's Red Eyes Black Dragon Meteor Impact or something. It's really dumb. It's a 6-star with 1,800 attack, 2,000 defense, I think.
Hmm.
And its effect is pretty much like if you have a Red Eyes on the field, you can equip that to him and it gets piercing damage. And if your Red Eyes gets destroyed, you can sack that card off instead.
So I mean, it's got, like, one good use.
Exactly. I mean,
you gotta, like, pull your perfect fucking hand.
Exactly. It's like, if you can somehow magically make it work fucking super consistently, it's probably a pretty OP setup, but the problem is making it work consistently, and also you have to give up a fucking spell and trap zone for that monster, whereas you could easily just run a bigger 7-star monster. You could run a fucking, you know, you could run Barrel Dragon, or you could run... You know, hell, you don't even have to run a dragon. You could run Dark Magician for fuck's sakes. You'd still have more attack.
Yeah.
And you could just, like, if you have the spell card at least, you could easily just slap, like, fucking a guard, like a Gravity Axe on him, or a Lucky Iron Axe from the card trader, or a fucking, if you have it, you could slap Big Bang Shot on him. Big Bang Shot gives you 400 attack points and piercing damage. Like,
damn.
You know, I don't like him. I don't like it. Like, my buddy, my one buddy, Count Crotchula, he has, like, a Red Eyes deck in real life.
Okay.
It's super unfair. Like, it's super unfair.
Well, you know, more recently, because they're kind of rebooting a little bit, kind of bringing back the older mm-hmm. characters and shit, they released a couple packs where it was, like, all of the Red Eyes, all of the Dark Magician kind of support. To kind of bring them back into the new era so they could actually be, you know, used.
And they're really overpowered now. Yeah. Like, it's actually funny. Like, decks centered around Blue Eyes White Dragon and its support cards are consistently in, like, the top 4 of the tournaments. Same with, I haven't seen any Red Eyes decks up there, really. I think most people avoid them in favor of, like, Blue Eyes.
Yeah.
Just because Blue Eyes is a little more consistent. You can do more with it. Whereas the Red Eyes decks, at least the one Buddy has, it's just a really over-glorified beatdown deck. It's like, oh no, you destroyed my monster. I'm going to summon 2 more out of the fucking graveyard because their effects all stack off each other.
Fucking chains just on, like, chains on chains.
Fuck.
Creating a fucking chain link fence.
I just thought it was funny because it's like, he was always like, man, your fucking pendulum monsters are so overpowered. And then the last time he comes over, he's like, I got to show you this. And he, like, 3 turns me.
Oh, God.
I'm like, fuck you. You want to talk about broken setups, you hypocrite? He's like, ha, ha, ha.
Get wrecked.
Yeah, no, I got fucking curb stomped pretty good. In my defense, I drew pretty shitty hand that duel, but still.
It happens.
Oh, so, fucking, again, I've also been playing a lot of duel links. I'm farming Paradox Brothers pretty good, mostly because I want all the gems I can possibly get out of their event. So, yeah. Gems. But
I was going to ask before we move on, how do you feel about the new ranking system? They're adding 4 and 5 to Platinum, and then there's Legendary 1, 2, 3. And when they implement this, everyone goes back to Rookie 1.
Oh, more gems.
And then it only resets once a month.
That sucks.
Right?
That sucks.
Fucking, you get 75 more gems, but then you lose out fucking 3 times.
You lose out on like fucking 300.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. I can't get out of silver. I keep dueling really sweaty people and drawing shit hands.
Oh. I was in gold 3 for a while there. Until it Goddamn. Reset. Yeah. I told you, that deck was doing really good for me for a while.
Yeah. I'm working on a deck right now. I'm working on a Beasts deck.
Yeah.
I got...
Fucking everyone's working on a Beasts deck. The new fucking mini box just completely destroyed everything before it.
Right? That mini box loves me. It wants my deck so hard.
Literally everything is like an effect card that's like 4 or less stars, and it's just like... Oh, yep. God, the strategies.
Right? It's, I've already gotten 2 copies of each of the Ultras.
Oh, really?
I've gotten every single Super at least once. I have 2 Gearfree the Swordmasters.
I haven't that opened box a single loves pack me. Yet.
Oh my God, it's so good. Well, the main thing is, if you, like, you're saving up gems really hardcore. No, you were working on Chaotic, weren't you?
I was, but I went and bought about 25 packs, you know, half and half of Age of Discovery and fucking that other one they brought back that I can't remember the name of.
Oh, Ultimate Rising?
Yeah, because there's a couple cards in there that I really wanted. Mm-hmm. Honestly, can't even remember what they are, but I do remember getting them, so I'm saving up gems again. I'm about 1,000 in, and...
Not bad.
I'm a little torn between just continuing on with Chaotic Compliance or moving on to that new Beast deck. Or mini box.
The main thing, I wouldn't worry about the Beast deck unless you're really unless you're really willing to literally just drop every gem you get into it. Because how many packs have I taken out of that thing total so far? I'm probably like 130 packs deep into that thing total, and I just got like a deck that semi works. Like I still need one more copy of like the super rare spell card Obedience Schooled. Once I have a second copy of that, it'll probably be a really, really powerful deck, but
I mean I'll probably until keep working then, on compliance because I want that double summon card.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I still don't have that fucker.
But yeah, so there was a story I wanted to tell you. It's Yu-Gi-Oh! Related. I started the new anime, came out in Japan. So, Yu-Gi-Oh! Vrains, it's called. I watched the first 2 episodes, and you know how every version of the anime adds in some new gimmick, right? There's a new kind of monster, and there's a new kind of quote-unquote dueling, right? That you can only ever do inside that universe. So, stop me when this starts to sound familiar. All the duels take place inside a virtual reality cyberspace. right?
Yeah.
Mm, yeah. So, the new gimmick for the duels, they're called speed duels. Same as every Yu-Gi-Oh! Ever, 4,000 life points. The main gimmick, though, is there are only 3 monster zones, there are only 3 spell and trap zones, and each duelist has a certain skill that they can use when certain requirements are met.
So are they just going to skip like the entirety of like season fucking two through whatever the fuck we were on before and just start putting out Vrain stuff into Duel Links?
Probably.
Oh god. But why?
Did they still have
synchro summons and horse shit like that?
If they do, I have no idea. It's only on episode 2 right now. Like, the very first duel just finished.
Because, like, if
the, and then
if
the
they...
new...
Go Sorry, ahead. Go on.
I was going to say the new monster type, they're called Link Monsters. I don't understand how exactly they work yet. Once I'm, like, 6 more episodes in, I'll come back in a later episode and I'll hash that out and we can laugh about it.
Okay, so there is some new horseshit monster. My big deal was if they brought it back to the original, like, normal effect fusion ritual spell trap, if it was just those, then definitely sure shit they're gonna like immediately get that shit into Duel Links. But
no fucking kidding,
maybe not, but fucking close enough.
It was so fucking surreal because I'm like just sitting there like watching YouTube videos like just trolling Duel Links, and I'm like, oh shit, the new Vrains episode should have came out today. So I fucking boot up my internet on my PlayStation 4 and I go and I find it. I'm watching it and like just half-assed playing Duel Links, just like auto-dueling, just farming keys for Paradox Brothers. And they get to it and the dude's like, you know, 3 monster zones, and I'm like, huh. And then he's like, oh yeah, and only 3 spell and trap zones. I go, really?
You hear that?
And what?
That's them beating their cash cow.
Nice.
It's that dead horse too.
But so I'm like, oh okay, so you know it's like Duel Links. Alright, that's fine, makes sense. That's not a bad way to do it. And then one of the turns in, the guy that the main character is dueling, he's like, I activate my skill, double draw. And I'm like, wait a fucking minute here.
So I text... Oh, sorry, go on.
No worries, I'm almost done. So I text Buddy real quick, I text Count Crotch, and then I'm like, dude, I need to tell you about this. And he's like, oh good, gossip, go. I'm like, so I'm watching the new Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime, and I did it the same way I just did it for you. I was like, stop me when this sounds familiar. So I lay it all out, and he's like, you're not joking, are you? I go, I mean, nope. He goes, wait, what? So I type in all capital letters. I go, Duel Links is a fucking advertisement. He loses it. He's like, I'm going to bed. I can't deal with this. I'm going to bed. I'm like, okay, good night.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if this game's making them more money than the last, like, the entirety of fucking GX did.
Oh, God, you know it is. look at all the guys running around in the upper tiers like, should I run 3 mirror walls or 2 mirror walls? I already have 3 Sphere Karibos and 3 Dunamis Dark Witches, but I'm wondering if maybe that 3rd mirror wall isn't worth it. I'm just like... I got my first enemy controller the other day. Yay!
Oh god. Like,
no, they're
it's fucking painful.
They don't need to beat the cash cow. It's literally willingly shitting money at this point. It's like there's too much in me. Get it out.
It's the goddamn goose with the golden egg then.
Yeah, except the golds are actually made of platinum with diamonds studded in them.
Yep,
fun fact.
Yep. It's got a hurt coming out.
Yeah, just a little bit. No, because the goose is also not gold. It's also just, it's a diamond goose.
Okay, so it's more like as it rubs together coming out. Oh, got it.
Yeah, it hurts a little, but you know, the diamonds are faceted, like very, very nicely, so they just kind of slide. They slide out real nice.
Lovely. Lubricated.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, in
Jesus Christ,
during your story there, I just remembered something, and that's when I cut you off. Was Shady Fun. Penguin? I was just watching him today. He has a mat.
I love him.
He has a play mat that's Vrains.
Yeah. So do I.
How the fuck do you get that?
It was given to everybody, dude. You should have one too. Just go into your deck editor thing.
Really?
Yeah. It was like a free promotion thing.
I don't remember ever getting that in the, you know, your gift box.
I don't think it was a gift box thing. I think it was just like a small announcement. It was like, oh yeah, we've sent you free shit. And I think you might have just skipped over it by accident, but yeah, they should
probably
be there.
But like every time they give you something, it appears in the gift box and then you gotta go receive all and shit.
Yeah.
Fuck.
If
I thought that was
he
had a Japanese account or some magic voodoo shit.
Yeah, me too.
Damn.
No, but yeah, it was a free promotion thing. They were handed out, I think, a week before the anime dropped. I think. So, two weeks ago we got them? I don't know. Don't quote me.
Okay. Well, I haven't been paying that much attention.
So, then, the other game that I've been playing...
Hold that thought.
My God. Okay.
The pants are off.
No pants!
Yeah. We record this podcast in the nude.
Yeah. You gotta.
Yep.
Doesn't have that je ne sais quoi otherwise.
Still don't know what that means.
I don't either, but it's French and I like it, so I say it. You know.
Oh, God.
How the world works. I don't know what this is, but I sound smarter doing it, so I'm gonna do it.
Fucking, I'm just gonna take that, like, 4-minute silence there and just record a nice little tape hiss fast forward noise and just stick that in there.
Nice. Sounds fucking wonderful, actually.
Yeah. Okay, so the game you've been playing, my God.
Oh my God. Has anybody heard of Fire Emblem?
What's that?
Fuck. And the podcast just went into the 10-hour mark. Anyways. But,
no time to explain.
That makes me laugh, because Destiny puns. So, we've talked about Fire Emblem a couple of times on the podcast. It's a very... very amazing game series. I love it to death. So just the other week, just on Friday, last Friday? Yeah.
Technically last Friday.
On the 15th. Fire Emblem Echoes Shadows of Valencia came out. And what it is it's a remake and reimagining of the second Fire Emblem game they ever made, which was originally just called Fire Emblem Gaiden. So, it follows the story of a boy and a girl named Alm and Celica. And essentially what happens is...
Hold on.
Celica...
Hold on.
What?
I heard almond what? And silica. So we got a nut?
Yes.
And a packet of gel.
Yes.
Okay, go on.
So anyways, Alm is the grandson of a famous general who retired, took the kid with him, his parents are dead or something, and, you know, just started raising him in a quaint little village with all his friends and the girl he likes, who's Celica. So one day some shit goes down, guy's like, I don't know, it's hard to explain this story. I powered through this game in literally like 3 days. So
tight.
But so long story short, some shit goes down in the little quaint little village and everybody's like, it's no longer safe here. So the girl, Celica, she gets spirited away to wherever, and then, you know, fast forward to however long it was, fast forward ahead, I think it's like 10 years later, 7 years later, something like that. We fast forward, and, you know, Alm is all grown up. He gets, quote-unquote, drafted into the military. Not quite. He kind of, like, volunteers.
Okay.
And so he ends up becoming the leader of the Deliverance, which is essentially the resistance against the one empire, because the continent's like split in two. There's the south and the north is starting to invade. So they're trying to fight him off. So he gets made the leader because the former leader believed that having nobles, like princes and stuff, run the resistance was a bad image. They felt that they weren't able to connect with like the commoners that joined the good fight, so they put Alm up there because they're like, you're just a fucking farm boy who's good with a sword. Everybody will relate to you. So
this whole
he inadvertently
story,
becomes, yeah.
This whole story sounds so fucking like cliched,
isn't it? Though, but it's good. It works. So, anyways, so Alm becomes the leader of the Deliverance slash the Resistance, whatever. And then it goes over to Celica, who you found out was shipped off to this island to be looked after and raised. And then she is like, y'all, fuck this shit. I'm out of here. So she dips out with a couple of her friends. So the cool part of the game is after the first two small prologues, like you put in like a few hours into each, like one where you're just controlling Alm and his crew and one where you're just controlling Celica and her friends. Once you get into Act 3, you can control both parties at the same time. But they're on separate sides of the map. Like, they can't get to one another.
Okay.
But they still have to kind of work together. Like, you get to a point in Celica's, like, if you just power through her whole thing, you'll get to a point at the end where it's like, you get somewhere and then you can't progress any further than that until Alm's group also gets up there. So you can't just like power through one whole half of the story and then catch up with the other half. Like you have to do it in increments, which is good because then it shifts up, you know, different maps, different enemies and everything. Cause Celica's route is more focused on mages, whereas Alm's is more focused on like swordsmen and cavaliers and stuff. So that way it's not, you get a good mix, right?
Yeah.
And one part that I really enjoyed was there was one part where I was playing through and Alm was like level 15 and he hadn't gotten the option to class change yet. I'll explain class changes in just a sec here because they're really weird. And I know you'll understand because you have played a couple of Fire Emblem games. So
to some degree.
He was like level... Yeah, to some degree. Enough to you'll understand what I'm talking about. So, Alm is like level 15, and he still hasn't had the option to class change. I'm like, holy shit. So I'm like, okay, well, fuck this. Like, I'm going to go play on Celica's route for a little bit. So I go and play on Celica's route, and I get to a point where this like old wizard or whatever is like, oh, I want to help any way you can. What can I do for you? And she's like, well, I don't need anything, but if you can help Alm out, because they're all in love, denial, all that, you know, standard cliches kind of thing.
Right.
So she's like, if you can help Alm anyway, then that's more than enough for me. So then he's like, oh, I could probably do something. And, you know, a white light shines and he's like, there, I've given him the ability to unlock his true potential. All he needs to do is will it. And I'm like, holy fucking shit. I can finally class change. So I did that. And so for anybody who hasn't played a Fire Emblem game or hasn't played very much of a Fire Emblem game, every unit in the game has a class. Now, if we go back to like the first Fire Emblem game we ever got, that's the simplest example. It was Fire Emblem 7 in Japan, but it was just Fire Emblem for us. So, for example, you start the game and your main character is a lord. So there's standard characters. But then throughout playing the game, you'll get other characters like cavaliers and Pegasus knights and mages and clerics and archers. So in the game, once your characters get to level 10, they have the option to class change. But you can't just do it whenever you want. You have to have a specific item. So if you want to level up your cap, if you want to class change your cavalier, you need to have a knight's crest. So let's say I have a cavalier, I get him to level 10 and I use a knight crest, I can turn him into a paladin. So he'll be able to move a few more spaces, he'll get a slight boost to all of his stats, he'll also have higher stat caps. So for example, a cavalier could have a maximum of 20 strength, whereas a paladin can have a maximum of like 26 or 27. So normally you think, oh, that's awesome. And then Fire Emblem will kind of punish you if you don't think ahead, at least the older games, because it's very recommended that you don't class change until you're at level 20 already or very close to. So you might be thinking, well, why wouldn't I just class change 10 levels sooner? Because that's 10 levels of stat points that you're not going to get. Because what happens is once you class change, you revert down to level 1 of your new class. So let's say you start off at level 1 and you level up all the way to level 20, then you class change, and then you level up all the way to 20 again. That's 40 levels total that you're going to get stat points in. Whereas if you level up from 1 to 10 and then from 1 to 20 once you class change, that's only 30 levels. So your character, unless they somehow get completely RNG screwed, is going to have way lower stats, assuming you don't grind out those extra 10 levels. And in the older games, it's very forgiving. You get very decent experience every time you kill an enemy. So it's not hard to grind those extra levels. Whereas...
Damn.
Yeah. So it's a grind, but it's worth it, especially considering the first time I played it, I didn't know that, and I literally played through the entire final chapter with the OP fucking unit that they give to you in the final fucking chapter just in case you're too stupid. So none of the characters I'd been playing through the game with could kill anybody, so I was like, well, everybody go hide in the back. My fucking new guy that's a level 20 with like maxed out stats is gonna do it for me because I'm an idiot. But
I'm still a little lost on how an almond can wield a sword.
It's the same way vegans get their almond milk. Like, you gotta get up early in the morning and milk the almonds.
Right.
What the almond does is, because they have to have nipples. You can't milk an almond if it doesn't have nipples. That's common sense. Also, only the male almonds have nipples. They also only have one nipple. Don't ask me how that works.
I mean, it makes sense.
Dirty jokes for the win. No. So what the almond does is it squeezes the sword hilt between its nipples, and then it just rolls around very violently. Because, you know.
Got it.
It's good because they can fight off the vegans. If they're wielding a giant broadsword, they can fight off those vegans, man. Ain't
getting sorry
jerked
for
off
them.
Today.
Feel sorry for them vegans.
Nah.
that's probably how they develop their powers, through like evolution, like their needs in fighting the almonds.
Exactly. So they develop like their telekinetic powers and all that.
Yeah.
The vegan police were established. For anybody who doesn't realize what that's from, it's from Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Read the comics if you can. Read the graphic novels. If you can't, the movie is on Netflix.
Yeah, we could probably do a whole podcast on that.
Goddamn, we should. I love that shit.
Love it.
Fuck. Anyways.
Fire Emblem.
So, yeah.
Almonds with swords.
Almonds with swords and silica packets with swords and magic. So, I'll talk a little bit about how the game is different, exactly. Like I said, for one, you're controlling two separate armies, which is super cool. I really like that. Especially, there was one part where I got to a really hard chapter in Celica's route. So I was like, man, fuck this. I'm not going to just keep trying this chapter. Like, I'm going to go over to Elms. I'm going to go do a couple of his chapters, and then I'll come back to Celica after I've had a breather. So, and sure enough, then I beat her chapter first try after my head's cooled down a little and I'm not making dumb choices.
All right.
So the main differences that they added in Shadows of Valencia is dungeon exploring in the third person. And also, the class change system is very, very different.
You know,
so
it's
what
kind of
it
funny
is,
that you say added in dungeon crawling, because technically they took dungeon crawling out.
Technically, yes. But
I miss dungeon crawling.
Right. So they brought it back in, is a better way to put it. So I want to talk about class changing because it really threw me for a loop.
All right.
Is I was leveling up my characters, and my one character was a mercenary. So I'm like, all right, cool. So Every other Fire Emblem game to date, a mercenary will turn into a hero and get swords and axes. At least in the older games, that's how it went. So I'm just leveling him up just casually, and he hits level 7, and then after the battle it says, my guy now has access to the Myrmidon class. And I'm like, well, that's fucking weird. So I'm like, okay. So I just keep playing through the game, and then like my archer hits level 7. Now he has access to the sniper class. I'm like, that makes sense. Okay, we're back on track. I get my who's another example? I get my cavalier to level 7. He has access to the paladin class. I get my soldier to level 7. He gets access to the knight class. I'm like, all right, okay, all right. So I'm like, how do I make them change? Because there aren't items in the game to do the class changes. So what happens is, in certain dungeons, in certain castles, whatever, you're able to find these statues of the goddess Mila. And the statue lets you class change anybody who has access to one. So I've leveled up and 4 guys have access to class changes. I go find one of these statues, and then I can turn my mercenary into a Myrmidon, I can turn my archer into a sniper, I can turn my soldier into a knight, etc. And I'm like, alright, cool. And they all get very, very small stat boosts, which also really threw me for a loop. So I'm like, most of the time in a Fire Emblem game, when you class change, you get anywhere from like 1 to 3 stat points in almost every stat when you class change. So I was like, why is it so small? And then I was playing through on Celica's route, and I class changed one of her Pegasus Knights, and she got like 8 points of health, like 3 points of attack, like 4 points of defense. I was like, why the fuck is it so different? So I'm like, fuck this, to the internet.
Internet solves but, everything.
Internet solves everything. Remember, kids, everything on the internet is fact.
Of course, of course.
No.
Definitely.
God damn it. What have I done?
No, you already said it, and it's on the internet, so that means it's true.
Fuck. Plot twist. So I hit up the Googles, and I hit up the Wikipedias. Not actually Wikipedia, but I hit up the Googles. And what it is each class in the game has base stats. So, like, a Myrmidon has... its base stats are, like, 11 strength, like, 9 skill, 10 speed, whatever. So how it works is they made it a way that you can't get completely fucked over by RNG with your stats when they go up every time you have a level up. So what happens is, so if a Myrmidon's base stats are 11 strength and my guy can class change and he only has 7 strength, he will get 4 points to reach the Myrmidon's minimum of 11. Whereas if my guy got really good RNG and he has like 12 strength, then he'll keep the 12 strength and he'll have the 1 extra point, but he won't get anything extra.
Okay, I follow.
Isn't that pretty cool? Like, yeah. No matter what, your character will always have, when they class change, a certain amount of stats.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was pretty awesome.
I can take that.
And then, so it's like, you know, and then your Myrmidon, once it hits level 10, can turn into a Dread Fighter. Your mages, when they hit level 12, can turn into sages. Your female mages, when they hit level 14, can turn into priestesses. Your clerics turn into saints. Your archers turn into snipers who turn into bow knights. It's good. It's a lot of fun. Once I understood how the class changing worked and why it worked like that, it made me feel a lot better. And this game encourages you to class change as soon as possible, because once you hit about level 10, your experience gains get really small. Like, it's hard to level up past level 10 unless you're fighting really strong enemies. So
just like an old RPG.
Just like a good old RPG. Yeah, exactly. So you might be wondering, oh, well, then why do the mages level up so much later? That's because mages are OP as fuck. They are so broken. My mage has pretty much walked me through that game. They do, like, most units in the game have fairly decent defense, but they have abysmal resistance. Like, so my mages can two-shot people that my fucking strongest melee fighter would need, like, 4 rounds to kill.
Damn.
Like, they're really fucking strong. But the only downside to the mages is your spells require HP to cast. So if I want to cast fire, it takes away one of my character's HP. So I'll go down from 22 to 21 and then cast my fire spell.
Yeah, I can dig that.
And of course,
there's got to be a repercussion to like having an overpowered character.
Exactly, and because they're so strong, right?
So there's no MP or SP?
No, there's no MP, there's no SP, there's no unlimited casting like in the older Fire Emblems. But
I can dig that.
So it's a really good balance. I really enjoyed it because there were times where I would like come up to an enemy and I'd be like, fuck, I need a really strong spell. And the most a spell ever takes for HP, I believe, was 10. And that was the Ragnarok spell. If there's a spell higher than that, I haven't unlocked it yet. But, so Ragnarok, what it does is each spell does something slightly different. Like, it'll cost so much HP, it'll have so much additional power, it'll have so much of a hit rate, so much of a crit rate, etc., right?
Okay.
And they all have varying ranges, too. Like, Thunder has a range of 1 to 3, whereas Fire only has a range of 1 to 2. Yeah, whatever, right?
Right.
So, it was cool, because there were times where I'd be like, fuck, this boss is a little... They got a lot of HP, I gotta whittle it down as much as possible. So I'd be like, it's risk and reward. You can either hit them really hard, but drop your HP to potentially super dangerous levels, or you could do chip damage and keep your HP in a safe place. So you gotta divvy up, right?
Yeah.
And the clerics are really good. They start off with an attacking spell right out of the gate, so they're not so painfully slow to level up. But the problem is, they're unlike most Fire Emblem games where as your mages level up, their magic gets stronger, so they'll be able to heal more health. It doesn't work like that in this Fire Emblem game. What it is the Psysic spell gives so much HP. The Recover spell gives so much HP. The Fortify spell gives so much HP. Like, it's a set amount of HP every time, no matter what. And granted, I never unlocked Fortify on any of my characters. Rip me, because it would have fucking helped. But, so, like, I'd have characters with, like, 40 HP, and the most I can heal them is, like, 12 points per cleric. So I'm just like, Jesus, fuck.
You know, this sounds like a very straight port from, like, a Famicom game. Did they add any of, like, the newer things, like generations, kids, stuff like that? Or is it
no,
just
they
like
left
a
all that
part?
Shit out, and I'm really fucking happy they did.
Oh, good.
Like, don't get me wrong. The being able to marry your characters in, like, Awakening and Fates, and being able to have kids and, like, children characters, it's not a terrible concept. It fucks up the flow of the game, in my opinion. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it messes with everything. And then Fates and Awakening also had, like, the team up, like, you could stack the characters on top of each other to, like, boost their stats and shit, but then the one character doesn't get any experience in the battle, and it's... Again, like, I bitch and I moan because I care. And Fates and Awakening, Fire Emblem Awakening, Fire Emblem Fates, they're both fun games. They're a good time. If you find them cheap, grab them, play them, you'll love them. It's just, if you've played all the Fire Emblem games up to that point, like I had, it's a fucking mile away. Like, it's a vast, vast difference, and it hurts your soul.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I don't know. I could rant all day about it, but
I just like that it's a straight port, because there's so many these days where it's like, here's this old game, but let's introduce this new, like, Final Fantasy VII. Like, they have the whole new kind of battle system.
Yep.
It's not just turn-based anymore with limit breaks and stuff. Like,
yeah. I'm I'm very skeptical on how the Final Fantasy VII Remake is going to do and if it's still going to be, you know, like, a really good time. I have no doubt that it'll be a shit ton of fun. It's just I'm a little worried about it.
I stopped having fucks to give as soon as I found out they were, like, updating everything, and then apparently it's supposed to be, like, episodic or something. But, like...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that episodic thing.
I think people...
It just sounds like a really shitty cash grab, in my opinion. Yeah. Unless the episodes are, like, $20 a piece, then that's not too bad, but...
Well, it's not a matter of how much they cost, it's how long they are. If it's true. If it's $20 and you're still in Midgar...
Yeah, that's fucked.
That's an issue. But no, so right. When you're 3D dungeon crawling in
Echoes.
Yeah, in Echoes. Does it look like an old game? Like, is it first person dungeon crawling?
No, it's third person. Like, you see your character running around.
Ugh. Here I was all excited for first person dungeon crawling again.
That would have been kind of cool, but it also it would have taken away from a couple parts. Like, I don't know. It's the enemies are hard enough to dodge in third person when you can see them as you're running away from them, but that'd be a fucking nightmare in first person.
But, I mean, it was a giant hassle. Like, we've definitely come a long way. But, like,
yeah,
I don't know. There's just something about first-person dungeon crawling in games. Like, I don't know. The original Phantasy Star and stuff did it. It's just interesting. Especially when,
it
like,
would
you
definitely
hit right,
be...
you turn 90 degrees, you hit right again, you turn 90 degrees.
But, you know, as it'd be super awesome to get, like, a first-person dungeon crawler. I mean, give it, like, another year. I'm sure there'll be, like, 10 of them for, like, the PlayStation VR and the Oculus and everything.
Oh, God. I hope so.
I mean, they just did. Have you seen anything about that Farpoint game for PlayStation VR?
No.
It looks like a lot of fun. Pretty much, like, you're, you know, alien planet. They give you a gun. Go kill shit.
See... I've got this really fucking old computer, ZX80. If you can wrap your head around this, it has 2 kilobytes of RAM. That's how tiny this thing is.
Is that, that's possible?
Yep. Yep.
Damn.
Super, super, super advanced because you could get an expansion card to get up to 16 kilobytes of RAM.
Oh, shit.
Right?
Could you imagine just, like, going back, like, taking up one of our computers back in time? Oh, how much RAM does it have? 8 megabytes. What? Yeah.
Fucking.
Yeah, 8 megabytes.
Missing a couple zeros there. I got 16 gigabytes.
Oh, well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do.
I think my laptop has 8.
Yeah, 8 gigabytes.
I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I was getting megabytes and gigabytes mixed up. My bad.
Fucking, they would,
I don't computer much.
They would shit their pants because they wouldn't know what to do with all that. Because, I mean, this tiny computer I have, you literally turn it on and write in whatever code you want to run.
That's wonderful.
But fucking, the way you save things on that was through cassette, which is technically magnetic storage. It's the same way we still do things unless you have an SSD. So,
yep.
There was a game that came out on it. One of the most advanced games on this thing was a first-person dungeon crawl where you pretty much have a T-Rex in this maze and it chases after you. You get more points the longer you last. Fucking, if someone could recreate that in VR, I would shit myself because it's so fucking amazing.
Dude, that'd be fucking scary.
Yeah, it fucking is.
Could you imagine you're just like, you know, walking around and everything, and then you just like, you go to like turn left down a corridor and you just like, he's just there. Ah, turn and run.
fucking in the game, it's like, you know, fucking one frame a second, pretty much. It just gets closer and closer, and then it's like jaws open onto you, and then it goes to black, and it's like a splash screen. It's like, you have died. Congratulations. Here's your score.
Yay, I died. Good job. That'd be really, really fun. Terrifying, probably, but a lot of fun.
God, I would love it.
But,
fucking...
But yeah, for the...
I want to play Echoes.
Go ahead.
Which is weird, it's because really good. I've never played beyond maybe like an hour's worth into any Fire Emblem.
I mean, I'm fucking done with it. I can definitely lend it to you. I don't really care when I get it back.
You know how this rolls, my mountain of games? It would just be at the bottom.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, just basing it how you play the other Fire Emblem games, like, I'd imagine you'd probably play like 5 or 6 hours of it. You'd be like, that was a good time. And then you'd be like, okay, I'm done. Well, no, you played Radiant Dawn for the most part. You got a really good amount of the ways through it.
No, I didn't.
Now that I think about it. No, I could have sworn you did.
No, I barely did anything in that one. I wanted to play it more, but I was like, I started and I was like, I can't give a single fuck about this. That GBA one I played a lot more, though.
The GBA one's good.
Yeah, Sacred Stones or whatever it was. But no, it's just...
Yeah, one
it's
of those.
An old game. It just looks new. It's kind of like, mm-hmm. you know, Pokemon Soul Silver and stuff like that. Like, I like old games. Exactly. So if they didn't change shit very much, I'd probably get right the fuck in that. Because, you know, I could play Dragon Warrior for 30 hours straight, and that's literally just... Turn in circles, press A a bunch, turn in circles, press A a bunch for 30 straight hours, and then you go through one maze and fight a guy.
Yeah. And, like, when it comes to the newer Fire Emblem games, I always play them on casual now instead of classic. Like, yeah, just to get through. Because I can't count how fucked I would have been if I had played on classic. Like, grand total, I probably had, like, 30 character deaths.
Wow.
Like, it's fucking hard. There were lots of times where I was like, okay, like, I should be fine, and then the fucking enemy phase will go, and the first thing that happens is my healer dies. I'm like, perfect.
They knew. Like, fucking aimed right for it.
Yeah, so, like, I'm terrified of, like, what would have happened, because I did think about playing it on classic. I thought about it, and then I was like, nah, I'm not risking it.
Nah.
I'm not risking getting halfway into this game, getting fucking shit on, and then... you know, either being stuck because I just can't fucking get through this part, or because the enemies fight fucking dirty, man. Yeah. They fight fucking dirty.
Fuck them.
Like, there's a class of enemy that they summon monsters every turn.
Fucking
every man. Turn they summon 4 more monsters. You get swarmed so fast. And, like, granted, the monsters aren't particularly strong, but once you get into later chapters and you're already dealing with, like, you know, barons and dread fighters and, like, all of these, like, really strong enemies, plus, like, mages and shit. I don't need a bunch of fucking gargoyles and shit running all up in my shit. Like, fuck that.
Fucking Zergrush.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, exactly. That's what it fucking felt like, was a fucking Zergrush.
Gross.
But,
fucking, that's, no, like, yeah, the disparity between Western and Japanese RPGs. Fucking Western ones are way too forgiving with, like, autosave points every 10 seconds. Japanese RPGs, it's like, you're gonna grind for 30 hours before you get off the first floor of this 100-floor fucking labyrinth.
Yep. And that's... Personally, that was my only personal issue with Fire Emblem Echoes, is I got to the end of the game, and not a single one of my characters was anywhere near level 20. I think the highest level character I had was maybe like level 12 or 13 after their final class change.
Is the norm that they're usually maxed out by the end of the game?
For most Fire Emblem games, you should have a few.
Hmm.
Like, I mean, easy.
I mean, it was the second one, so what you're used to, I mean, is everything that came out afterwards.
Well, of course.
So maybe the fact that most of ours, you know, you'll have a couple completely maxed out, was probably just a feeling of satisfaction, and they made it easier to reach that feeling.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah.
It was just like, it wasn't that I had an issue with it. It wasn't that it made like the game unnecessarily hard where it was like, oh my God, if all my characters had like three or four more levels, I'd be walking over dudes. Like,
right.
No, it was just, it was disheartening to get to the later parts of the game and have to, you know, really struggle through a couple of the missions. And I'd like maybe two of my characters would get a level up after my whole team just went through like 50 enemies and only like two of my characters would level up.
Old RPGs were like that though. It's like, hey,
yeah, here's, they were fucking savage, man.
Here's this minute amount of fucking experience. By the way, you need 10,000.
Yeah. The best example for like how fucking ruthless old RPGs were, like Jukebox played through Dragon Warrior and that was a fucking grind fest. A good example is the original Final Fantasy on NES. It was like the very first boss in the game, Garland. Like, he was almost impossible to beat without at least like 2 to 3 hours of grinding on goblins in the forest, because it took a long ass time to get up to like, you had to be like, I think like minimum level 4 and you had a pretty good chance of beating him. So it took like 2 to 3 hours of grinding goblins, because every 4 goblins you'd kill, you'd get like 1 experience point.
Jesus.
So, and then you skip over to like when they ported it onto like PlayStation 1 and they ported it over to GBA and PlayStation and PSP, and like they put Final Fantasy 1 on fucking everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you go from the NES version. And I think the PS1 version, I think they left it unchanged in the PS1 version.
I don't remember.
But again, don't quote me on that. Sorry. So you go from the NES version and having like 2 to 3 hours of grinding right at the beginning of the game, which, let's be real, is like, it doesn't diminish from how amazing the game was and still is, but it's just like at the very beginning of the game, give me a break. To you move to like the GBA version where 15 minutes of grinding and you're more than good enough. You're going to be level 5 or whatever in 15, maybe 20 minutes. You're off to the races from there. And then maybe a few times throughout the game you got to grind a little if a boss gives you trouble. Man, like the fucking NES version, that will rip your soul out.
I still hold that Dragon Warrior was more brutal because there's literally two bosses. The first boss is like a green dragon, which becomes a regular enemy later on. And the second boss is the Dragon Lord. But like, to even get out of the first area, you gotta fucking grind in like a 4-square patch. I mean, to fight the very enemies that they present to you, you gotta fucking grind.
Yep. Oh no, a slime, said no one ever except the first Dragon Warrior hero.
Yep. Fucking Erdrick.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, you know, like, it's weird to think that way back then, that was the way that they made games in order to, like, elongate the playtime. Because they didn't really have a measuring stick to be like, should be this long, should have this much grinding, should feel like this. Like, they had to invent that shit.
Yeah. They literally just had to, like, make the game in its entirety, and they'd be like, okay, we need this to last a while. They need to be... And that's just it. Final Fantasy, I understand it a little less, because even if you took out how much unnecessary grinding you probably do have to do in the NES version, like, you're still looking at probably a 20-hour game, easy. Whereas in Dragon Warrior, like, for example, if you didn't have to grind as hard as you did in Dragon Warrior, because it took you, what, you played Dragon Warrior, I think you said, for, like, over 30 hours?
Somewhere between 20 and 30.
Yeah, to get to the final boss. Or did you beat him eventually? I always ask you this, but I never remember.
I did eventually beat him. Like, okay, much later, because eventually I was like, man, I want to play something else.
Now, just imagine if every enemy in the game gave you 5 times the normal amount of experience.
It'd be done so much faster.
How fast would you be done that game?
5 times faster.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, smart ass. Yeah, so it's just that. It's like with the older role-playing games and stuff, that's pretty much why there's so much grinding, is they did it to pad out the length of the game to make it feel like more of an adventure, and it fucking worked.
Yeah.
Like, my God, do you feel good when you make progress in those games? Like, that's just...
And
that's a fact. You know, like, when you beat Garland at the beginning of Final Fantasy, you're on cloud fucking nine.
They fucking learned over time, too, because, like, Dragon Warrior was the first of the first, and then, you know, they released three more on the NES, and each one had more and more stuff. Like, by the fourth one, you had a full party, and you had, like, a full map and, like, traveling and stuff like that.
Like, yeah, exactly. So it's just that, like, everything's a trial run, right? So I understand why Fire Emblem Echoes is like that. I completely do. And it's wonderful that they kept it so true to the original.
That makes me happy. Which,
and I mean, granted, I've never played the original, so I can't be a hardcore judge. But I know they had the dungeon crawling. I know they had, I'm pretty sure it's a fucking perfect clone almost. I think the only thing they did is they added in a couple of new characters. Like, there's one starting character you get. Her name is Faye. And my God, she's adorable, but oh my God, did she both fuck me over and save my ass so many times. But so to my knowledge and from
that, but that's okay.
I'll explain in a sec. But so pretty much to my understanding and like from what I've seen, she isn't in the original game.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. I don't know how I feel about that, because I mean, if it was a true port, they wouldn't have added anything else, but if it doesn't detract from like the main story and what they already established before, then not at all.
Yeah, no, she's just an extra character. She's just an extra character in the group of friends, just to flush it out a little more. I think it was mainly to add a female element into the group of friends.
Got it.
Because, I mean, it's like you have Alm, Celica, and then the friends are Tobin, Cliff, Gray.
Insert male name. Insert male name.
Insert male name, yeah, exactly. I think there was one more. Oh, there's Lucas. Lucas joins your party right at the beginning, but he's not, like, part of the group of friends, but he's, like, one of your starting characters. So it's all dudes, right? So I'm pretty sure they put Faye in there for the sake of having a female character. Okay. And it works. She's perfectly fine. Essentially, all she is she's the female friend who's madly in love with the main protagonist, whose feelings aren't reciprocated, you know, pretty cliche standard stuff. But she's super cute about it, because there's one support conversation. That's another thing they added in. They added in supports, which they didn't have in the original, which was good because it was fun. It gave every character a little more life, you know?
Yeah.
So there's one support conversation between her and Alm, and he's just like, hey, how are you doing? She's like, oh, I'm doing great, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, do you have any enemies you need me to slay? And he's like, what? And she's like, well, you just point me in them and I'll murder all of your enemies for you. And he's like, okay, great. I'm like, shit.
Okay, but that's like,
yeah, I don't
that's
know,
like Paya in Zelda.
Yeah.
Fucking the diary entries. And then at the end she's like, oh, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, no kidding. But the reason Faye saved my ass is because she's a really strong character. Like, I made her a Pegasus Knight, which I regretted after a little while. I wish I'd made her a cleric.
Okay.
Because I could have used some extra healing on Alm's route, but whatever, no harm done. So I made her a Pegasus Knight, and I don't know why, but she was a fucking crit machine. She read my goddamn mind all the time. Like, I'd go into a fight and I go, okay, she'll leave this guy with 5 HP because Alm was starting to fall behind. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna feed him some easy kills. So literally, I fucking shit you not, 9 out of 10 times that I used her to weaken an enemy, she fucking crit them.
Nice.
Like, it sucked so hard though. Because I was like, all right, I just need to weaken him.
Take it,
yeah.
And he's gonna.
And get then the she'd XP. Fucking spin her lance around in the air and stab a guy through the eye socket. And I'm just like, now look what you did.
Look at this mess.
And like, there was the one time where she literally critted three enemies in a row, back to back. Like, God every damn. Time, I was like, okay, just weaken this guy. Like, Alm needs 10 experience points, and he can't fight this major. He's gonna get shit on. He's gonna fucking die. So just weaken him a little, so I can one-shot him. Crit. Son of a bitch!
You know, it's so frequent, it's probably just, you know, coded in there that if it's gonna be within this much HP of killing it, just crit it.
Yeah, no kidding. Which... Well, that happened with the final boss, and it sketched me out, because I was like, fuck, like, he's starting to shit all over all my characters. Alm's the only one who can do, like, Sindicating and damage, but if I send him in, he's gonna fucking die. And I'm like, screw it. I'll hurt him a little. He should survive, assuming the boss doesn't crit. I might as fucking well risk it at this point. The boss had, I think, like, 40 HP left.
Okay.
Like, so a good chunk still. And Alm's attacks were going to do 15 apiece. He was going to double attack, so he would have done 30 damage if he didn't crit.
Right.
So I'm like, if I crit, I win. If I don't crit, whatever. I'll fucking kill him next turn. So I go into the fight, and the first thing Alm does is this super special animation that kills the final boss. And I'm just like...
You what, mate?
I'm like, huh? I'm like, okay. So that was a story-driven crit, but there was no indication... that was going to happen. Like, I literally chanced upon it. Like, I'm like, I mean, lame. I'm happy that it saved me the nightmare that was this boss fight, but
lame.
What? Granted, man. there was a small clue, because I lowered the boss to about 5 HP, and then the next turn, his turn came around, because that was literally like my last character hitting him for some chip damage. He went down to 5 HP because she critted. So he go down to 5 HP, and then his turn comes down and he regened 40 HP. So there was a hint that I was supposed to use Alm, but I was just like, fuck, what do I do?
Use the hero. Use the hero.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like,
so yeah.
It's like the end of Earthbound. You just kind of all of a sudden have this new prey thing in your menu.
Yeah.
And, like, I fought Gygas for, like, half an hour, and I'm just like, what the actual fuck do I do?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So,
Fire Emblem Echoes is wonderful. I had a ton of fun with it. And I still got a little more, because there's, like, a little bit of, like, post-game stuff. Nice. There's, like, a post-game dungeon, so I'll probably work on that either tonight or even tomorrow or something. I don't know.
I hope it kind of sets a bit of a precedent so that they can recreate, like, the other games. Because, I mean, we're missing 7 of them.
See? Now, here's where shit gets real fucking interesting. So, one of the producers, or one of the creators, or whatever, of Fire Emblem...
Yeah.
...said if they remake another game, he wants to do Fire Emblem 6. Which is the sequel to the very first Fire Emblem game that we ever got, but somehow came out before its prequel? The sequel came out before the prequel? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So,
a little.
Yeah, so that's the game with Roy in it. Roy is the main protagonist. So if you've played Smash Bros. And you're like, ooh, who's that red-haired kid? Like, that's his game. So
yes.
I'm really hoping we hear about that in the next, like, year and a half or so. Like, hey, they're fucking remaking Binding Blade. And I'll just be like, take my fucking money. Just
throwing it at your screen.
Yeah.
Fucking, I have a Fire Emblem anime. It was an OVA. And
oh,
it was
with Marth, yeah.
Yeah, it was released on VHS. I can't remember who was in it. Because that was in, like, 1996. Was Marth around in 96?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Marth came out, I think the first Fire Emblem came out in the 80s, dude.
Well, I didn't know who Marth was from.
Oh, yeah, no. Marth was from the very first Fire Emblem game ever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
See, I thought he was in one of the ones that we got.
1990, sorry, is when the first game ever came out.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's just the first one. Like, this video came out in 96, so, I mean, it would have probably been a more current game, right?
The ones out till then were the first one, Gaiden, Mystery of the Emblem, which was the second game with Marth in it, and then Genealogy of the Holy War came out in 96.
Yeah, I'm looking it up now on my phone.
That one's...
Because I haven't watched it yet. All I know is that we got this OVA, like, way longer before anything Fire Emblem came out in North America. So, like, people didn't even know it was connected to a game.
Genealogy of the Holy War was a weird game anyways. They added in, like, every chapter, I think, almost every chapter was, like, you had to defend your home base so you could, like, upgrade your castle and shit. It was weird. Sigurd is the main character in Genealogy. That's it.
Fucking don't scroll on me. There's a Japanese anime OVA based on Fire Emblem Mystery of the Emblem, the third game.
Okay, so it is with Marth then.
And it's from 97. I'm gonna watch that.
Do it.
Again, we could talk about that next episode.
Absolutely. I was about to say we should probably wrap it up.
Yeah, I was gonna say that too.
Yay.
So, I'm Jukebox Hero.
I'm Kelrix King.
And this is the Infinity Games Podcast.
Thank you for joining us for episode 9. We'll see you next time for episode 10.
Double digits.
Yay.
Binary digits.
Binary digits.
Doesn't that make
ones
you
and
hard?
Zeros.
So hard.
So hard.
So moist.
We love you. See you next time.
Okay.